Selling Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. It's time for Talking with TD.
Touchdown, Tennessee!
The latest on the Two-Tone Blue with ESPN's Teron Davenport.
Put up a shut-up term.
This is Nashville's best sports talk.
ESPN.
102.5 The Game.
Had to make up for last week, man. Ran out of breath on the windup, but it's all good. We are back in action. We got a jam-packed show for you. Elijah Campbell working the switches, making this thing sound beautiful in your ear. And we're going to do things a little bit different. As always, we are going to bring in one of my ESPN counterparts for the team that the Titans are playing this week. It's Ravens NFL Nation reporter Jameson Hensley, and we'll have Run TMC also. But ladies and gentlemen, we're going to give you a nice dose of the Miracle Man. You know, he calls himself Mike Miracles on Twitter, Mike Herndon. He's going to be here on the intro and the outro. So we're going to open it and close it, the Alpha and Omega. Mike, what's going on?
Hey, I'm doing good, TD. How about you? I'm impressed with that the pipes on that open, man.
Yeah, man, I got some lungs on me, man. I have some lungs now.
I hear you.
Yes, sir. And speaking of having lungs, man, you need lungs to carry the football 387 times and run for over 2,000 yards, average 5. You know the thing that's most impressive out of all that to me, Mike? Derrick Henry averaged 5.36 to be exact, yards per carry on 378 carries. I said 387. I got Jamal Lewis on my mind. But it's 378 carries, 5.4 yards average. That alone is crazy.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah, he's efficient and a workhorse, and you just don't see that combination that often. Usually you get to pound a guy into the line of scrimmage 30 times, defenses get wise to it, and you might be able to crank out four, maybe 4.5 yards a carry, but five, almost 5.5 is insane for that kind of volume.
And the thing is, the reason why I think he has that is because he's a home run hitter. How many times and we've talked about it on Twitter a few times, and you know, and I'll see your post during the game, and I'll be posting the same thing. It's like, okay, yeah, that's a 2-yard run, 3-yard run. The big one's coming, and next thing you know, he cracks a 50-yarder, and all of a sudden that average totally shifts to a more respectable number. I think that's what's so remarkable about him. But what's also remarkable, and this is something that was pointed out on social media earlier today, he doesn't have a Pro Bowl offensive lineman. Albeit Nate Davis should be a Pro Bowler. And for PFWA, he is getting my vote as an all-pro guard. I will put that out there. But I think that's something else in itself.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, first guy to go for 2,000 without a Pro Bowl. And I do agree with you. And you and I are on the same page about Nate Davis. Nate Davis had a tremendous season. I think Saffold and Ben Jones certainly have an argument, too. I mean, Saffold, the injuries probably hurt him a little bit. But those guys in the middle have done a great job. But when you look at the outside, I mean, Dennis Kelly is good. You know, he's a starting level, about an average level starting tackle, in my opinion. But then you've got a third-string left tackle out there, and Henry's just – he doesn't miss a beat, and you know, it's a credit to, I think, the Titans' entire organization that they're able to do it. But it really, Henry is special, and the amount of times that you can see him, you know, on these runs where he is making the offensive lineman right no matter where he takes his guy is really impressive to me. Henry, you know, the national conversation about him always focuses on his size and his stiff arm and his speed and all the physical elements that he brings to the table, because they are, you know, tremendously unique. But the fun things about him, I think, are his vision and his conditioning and kind of the little things that have made him, they've taken him from a guy that was always a physical specimen into the best running back in the NFL. And I think it's those little things that have set him apart at this point, and set him up for a long tail end to his career here. I don't think he's anywhere close to being done.
No, I agree. And it's funny because you mentioned the size, and that's something I told Derek this actually last year when we were actually able to go into the locker room and talk to these guys. I told him, I said, man, I have been getting in arguments. You've been the cause of me being in arguments since 2015. And he looked at me and just laughed. And it's something that I've been saying since back when he was at Alabama. He's not just a big bruising back. In fact, that's not really what he is. He's a guy he's a breakaway runner, a home run threat. So I'm glad you mentioned that. And then also looking at division, here's the thing that really stands out to me. And this is a testament to Tony Dews and the things that they do in during individual period in practice. The footwork and vision, they're married. And I think when you look at that jump cut, and I bring this up over and over and over again against the Ravens, that jump cut and the way he landed and took off like that, that's not something you see someone that size doing. And he pulled away from that whole secondary. So you're absolutely right. That guy is very unique, and there are going to be some really good years ahead. But this year, let's focus on this year. The quarterback award, why is he a candidate for the MVP?
You know, I think when you look at it, it's the uniqueness of the season that he just had. You know, he's only the eighth guy to ever get to the 2,000-yard mark. He did it in an era that's all about passing and really, you know, running back rotations and everything like that. So he basically lapped the field in the rushing title. I think he beat Dalvin Cook by, you know, 400 yards or something like that, which is pretty insane on its face. And if you want, I think the best argument for Derrick Henry to get the MVP, and it's tough because they throw that value word in there, and it's hard, you know, how important the quarterback position is to really overcome that in that discussion. But if you look at the gap between Derrick Henry and any other running back, and then the gap between whether your flavor is Rodgers or Mahomes, either one, and the rest of the quarterback field, Henry is in a class by himself among running backs. It is not even close. And the quarterbacks, you know, Tannehill and Josh Allen and these other guys are not that far off of where Rodgers and Mahomes are, at least from a, you know, numbers standpoint. You know, if you want to say play on the field, yeah, you know, Mahomes does some stuff that's freaky and nobody else does. But, you know, if you look at what they're putting up, you know, I think it's a closer field among the quarterbacks, and it is not close at all in that running back.
100%. 100%. And just to add to that, right, I talked to Adrian Peterson about Derrick Henry. And he said, not only is it remarkable that he's accomplished what he has, what makes it even more remarkable is the fact that every single week, you know teams are coming in to stop Derrick Henry, and he still gets it. And that's the thing that really stands out to me, because I imagine myself being in the defensive meeting, and I could just picture the defensive coordinator when they're going on Wednesdays, hitting the table like that and saying 22 is not going to run through our faces. And guess what ends up happening? He runs through their face, to use Chris Sanders' term. So I 100% agree. And I think Brandon Marshall made a very good case, because what you're seeing from Mahomes and from Rodgers and Allen, I'm going to put Tannehill in there from Deshaun Watson. You've seen this before multiple times. Only seven other guys have surpassed the 2,000-yard plateau. But as Marshall pointed out so beautifully, only two have surpassed that plateau and had 15 or more touchdowns. And then you look at Derrick Henry is the only second player in NFL history to have 200 yards in the end of back-to-back seasons. Oh, and he's the only player to rush for 200 or more yards in three consecutive games against the same team. Oh, and there's more. He has the most 200-yard games with three touchdowns. Like, there's some, you could just keep going and going and going. That, in my opinion, makes it so unique.
Yeah, and you know, I made the point on when I was watching the game live on Sunday. You know, I was sitting there going, you know, I was keeping up with the milestones and where he needed to be to get to 2,000, like everybody else. And I, you know, we got to the fourth quarter, and he broke in the 2000, and there's still a good bit of time left, and I was going, you know, he could possibly reach Dickerson, and the fact that I'm sitting there in the fourth quarter of a game and he needs like 87 more yards, and I'm like, well, you know, it's not impossible. It's kind of a testament to what Derrick Henry is, and he makes, you know, when he puts up 150 yards, I don't think anyone really bats an eye at this point, at least not those that watch him, and that's a huge performance. Any other running back goes for 150, you talk about that as
right.
career year, career performance, you know, and Henry does it weekly.
It's crazy. It's crazy. And you're right. That puts things in perspective. And we're talking to Mike Herndon of Broadway Sports Media Group. Definitely make sure you guys and girls check out the work that they're doing over there. It's awesome work. And it made me say, hey, man, I got to step my game up a little bit, by the way. So good job on that part. Benefits everybody. But before we end this segment, I just want to get your take on how this offense can go against that Titans defense. Because, you know, Cookie Monster's back. Calais Campbell, the guy always sounds like he's thirsty. And Brandon Williams is going to be out there too. So what's your take on this offense against the Ravens defense?
Yeah, man, I think it really changes the complexion of the matchup compared to the last time they played. Because those two are, they're immovable objects in the middle of that Ravens front. And I think it's going to be pretty important. And we don't know, obviously, right now whether Saffold is going to be able to make it out there with the ankle or not. But and Aaron Brewer played the first time, but Aaron Brewer's 6'1", like 275, and Calais Campbell 6'8", whatever he is, 310, something like that. That's a length matchup that I just have a hard time seeing Brewer being able to credibly
right.
hold up. Whether it's pass protection or run blocking against a guy like Campbell. So I would imagine we'd see a lot of Campbell over Brewer, and that's probably going to be a long day at the office for the rookie if that happens. So I think it's going to be pretty important that Saffold finds a way to get out there, at least for the Titans' chances of putting up big numbers on offense in this game. But we'll see. I definitely think those two change what they can do compared to what they saw last time.
What do you think of the receiver-DB matchup, right? Because you got Corey Davis, A.J. Brown, going against, Marlon Humphrey and one of my favorite corners. I just like him because he's just spicy, man, Marcus Peters. So what do you think of that matchup?
You know, I like Peters a lot, too. It's an interesting one because I think A.J. and Corey, with how physical they are, I think you can maybe bother Peters a little bit with that physicality. Yeah, you know, he's a – very good cover man. I don't know that he's the most physical guy in the league. Now, Jimmy Smith, he's got some physicality to his game. Marlon Humphrey certainly does. But I think if you get those guys matched up with Peters, you might be able to kind of go at him a little bit, especially with some of that underneath stuff, and make him come up and tackle these 210, 220-pound receivers all day, in addition to his work setting the edge against Henry.
The big thing for me is knowing how Marcus Peters likes to jump routes and knowing how he does that a lot of times off of instinct, but also off of film study. So guess what? You know what he's seeing on paper, on film, over and over again, that play action crossing route. I really think what they need to do with A.J. Brown, that is, run that play action, that crosser, that dagger route like that, but pump fake it and have him turn upfield. And I think that's an opportunity to create a big play. And it just seems like this is one of those games where a single big play in the passing game, because both of these teams run the football so much, I think a single big play in the passing game could make all the difference in the world.
Yeah, I totally agree with you on that. And I think what we saw the Ravens kind of do, and the Titans finally adjusted in that second half, it bothered them and seemed to give them fits early in that regular season matchup, was they kind of packed the paint, right? They packed everybody in between the hashes and said, well, we're not going to give you those crossers and those little, little pop passes that you like to run out of play action. We're going to take that away and make you beat us outside. And they did make some adjustments. And you saw, I think Davis got loose on one where he kind of went like he was going to run the crosser, and then he bends it back out to the a little post corner kind of route, and you saw that adjustment happen in real time. So now it's, do the Ravens come back with that same strategy, or do they pivot and then they have to adjust again? So I think there's a lot of this, these teams have played each other so often here in the past year now that it's going to be really fun to watch some of those game within a game kind of adjustments and readjustments that these two coaching staffs are going to have to make against each other.
No doubt about it. So that's the offense. Don't go anywhere, ladies and gentlemen. We are going to go to a break. We'll come back with Jameson Hensley. And before we do, you know what we have to talk about real quick, and that's if you're not subscribing, A, shame on you. But if you're not, go ahead and search Talking with TD on Google, Spotify, iTunes, any of the areas where you get your podcast. Go ahead and subscribe there. If you're subscribed, I appreciate it. Go ahead and review, rate. We appreciate you. We'll be right back.
This is AJ Brown, and you're talking with TD.
Yeah, James Brown, it's only appropriate. As we do each week, go through that Rolodex, flip through. Oh, I landed on H. I got my guy, Jameson Hensley. Yes, sir, ESPN, NFL Nation, Baltimore Ravens reporter. Jameson, what's going on, man?
Nothing too much, just getting ready for the playoffs. I didn't know if with COVID and everything that – especially with what the Ravens went through in late November, early December, I didn't know if they would be getting to this point with 16 games played, but here we are.
Yeah, exactly. Here we are. And then even with the Titans trainer, he tested positive. The building is still open. We went to practice, so we got to see that. It was a light practice. But, yeah, man, it's been a lot. It's been an awful lot for both of these teams. It's been a long road. And they kind of started at different places, right? And that's what I want to open up with, because the music, the big payback, I don't know. It would take a lot for me not to feel like this game is a big payback game, but some of your reporting has kind of unearthed that it's a little bit different. So let's get into that some. Why is this game – what have you found from these guys that has made this game not a revenge game?
Yeah, I mean, and a little, it changed a little bit today. Some guys did say, hey, definitely there you have to be motivated when you lose – twice to a team, especially in the playoffs, you're going to have some motivation. Lamar Jackson said today, anytime you lose, it is motivation. But you also have Coach John Harbaugh, who is trying to make sure you don't create any bulletin board material. You're trying to keep everything in check. And he said, you know what, for his team, they're not taking the bait. They're just his message to the team is, just try not to kind of get into the whole of bad blood between the teams. Just say, hey, just keep everything between the lines, between the whistle, and he also said between your ears. Yeah. So he's saying be smart about things. But as we've known, as we've seen it from how the Titans kind of made fun of Big Trust after the playoff game, how they went and stood on the Ravens logo and John Harbaugh laughed from all by himself. There is some history between these two teams. We'll see if it kind of ignites on Sunday. But you have John Harbaugh and some of the other players here saying, you know what, the past does not kind of mean anything for the present game. But you had a few players today, especially nose tackle Brandon Williams, saying, you know what, you have to kind of use that as motivation because you're in, as far as the Ravens, they're in the same situation as they were a year ago. And they lost to the Titans. They don't want to have that repeated on Sunday.
Good. I'm glad some guys came out and actually kept it 100 with you. You know what I mean? Because, exactly. Like I said, there's no way, in my opinion, that you could look at this and say it's just another game, another playoff game. Because Christmas got canceled last year. You know what I mean? I remember the shock in that stadium. Yeah, it's definitely something that they're going to have to, roll forward. And I think in addition to that, as you posted your article about Lamar Jackson and his number one goal, and here's, one thing I really hate, and I'm going to try not to go on a rant, but I absolutely despise the way Lamar Jackson is viewed by the general public. And it's been that way for so long, and the 0-2 narrative is definitely something that under normal weeks, I would want him to eliminate, but I still want to cover football. So this week, you know, I don't want it to happen, but how important is that to him to overcome that?
It is. It's a lot. And because when you're a quarterback and you want to be known as, especially a player as successful and has so much pride as Lamar Jackson, you want to be known as your reputation, your legacy. You played the best when it mattered the most. Mm-hmm. And so far for Lamar, look what he's done in the first three seasons than the regular season. I mean, he's 30-7. He's won more games than anybody else in the league since he took over in the middle of 2018. I mean, more than Mahomes, more than Russell Wilson. He's 30-7. But when it comes to the postseason, 0-2. And he has struggled. I mean, he has had five turnovers in two games. He even acknowledged today he's probably been pressing a little too much because he wants to win so badly that he maybe forces things out there. That's what causes mistakes. But, you know, honestly, this is kind of the last thing that Lamar has to prove. I mean, it's kind of crazy when you think about when he was selected in the bottom of the first round in 2018, people questioned whether he could even be a legitimate NFL starter.
That's and
I mean, he not only took the Ravens to the playoffs in his first year, won NFL MVP in his second year, and now in his third season, when they were 6-5, he took them again, five straight wins to the postseason. And I thought I was so proud of Lamar today because he did make the point that, yeah, there a lot of stuff is being made that he's 0-2, and he wants to, as he put it, erase the narrative. But he also made the point that there are a lot of quarterbacks that in their first three seasons, they don't even get to the playoffs.
Mm.
So to make the point, yeah, he hasn't won since he's gotten to the playoffs, but he almost kind of said, you know what, you also have to make the point that he's been good enough to get a team to the playoffs for three straight years. So I thought that was very good of him. But so this is something as far as he wants to kind of, and he's done that throughout his whole career, is when the critics have come up, he has loved, he has taken such great satisfaction into silencing them. And I think that's what he wants to do as far as this one. He wants to win that postseason game so then nobody can say, they might have to say something else. Maybe they'll say, hey, you haven't won a Super Bowl. But at least they can never say, hey, you didn't win in the postseason.
They'll find something else. You know how that goes.
I know.
J.K. Dobbins, let's get into him because good gracious, man. The rushing, who puts up over 400 yards rushing in a game? You know what? I don't know what team does that, but the Ravens did. And I know Dobbins has been a part of the resurgence there. So what's going on with Dobbins and the rushing attack?
Yeah, second-round pick. And people kind of like it raised, you know, people's eyebrows raised a little bit when they used the second-round pick on a running back because they're like, wait a second. You have a Pro Bowl running back in Mark Ingram from just a year ago. You have Gus Edwards, who he's rushed for 700 yards in many, many seasons.
Mm-hmm.
So why are you drafting J.K. Dobbins second round? Well, I think they kind of had the big picture. They knew Mark Ingram being over 30, you really couldn't depend on him for a full season, a full workload. And I will give them credit. J.K. Dobbins, every time they've given him the ball, he has shown flashes. But it's to the point where they never went and said, hey, for a full game, we're giving you 20 touches. You know, you're going to be the featured guy. As because of a rookie running back, they knew that and kind of their thoughts, this is a playoff team. We're going to try to use J.K. Dobbins when they need to do it, they need to rely on, because Dobbins is the most explosive playmaker they have on offense outside of Lamar Jackson. Mm-hmm. And so they have paced him throughout the year. And increasingly through December and then in the season finale in Cincinnati, they have increased his workload, and then you saw against the Bengals, 160 yards. He's now scored a touchdown in six straight games. He's going to be the feature back next year, but I think throughout these playoffs, again, John Harbaugh, through his history, has never really liked to depend on rookie running backs, not even when Ray Rice was a rookie back in 2008. But I think when they need to have a big play on offense in the playoffs and they need it to come from a running back, that's when it's going to be J.K. Dobbins' time.
And then to flip it to the other side, the Titans, you know, they have a bit of a, not patchwork, but they've had to do some rotation, some rotating, at the offensive line. The last time these teams played Roger Saffold didn't play. He did say this week, he said that there's no doubt he's absolutely going to play. So that being said, when they matched up last time, Brandon Williams, Calais Campbell were not there. I personally believe that Calais Campbell was brought in, and that goal of bringing a guy like that was established immediately when that clock hit triple zero, and Derrick Henry having done what he did, I think right then and there they said, we have to get somebody to stop the run. So that being said, Campbell and Brandon Williams, they haven't been on the field together against the Titans before. What kind of impact you think they could have?
I mean, like you said, they knew when they couldn't stop the run against Tennessee in that playoff game. That's when they were like, they needed, especially in that three technique area, they needed a Calais Campbell, and they went out and got him. I will say with Calais this year, and he has not really been fully healthy, maybe even since September. He's still coming back from a calf injury, and I think this is going to be the healthiest he's been in a couple of months. And believe me, with what Calais has done, I mean, he has been one of the great defensive players over the past decade. I'm still wondering, we have yet here with the Ravens, people have not seen the best of Calais Campbell yet this year. So you're wondering, how much does he have left? Is it going to get ramped up in playoff time? But I think with what the Ravens envisioned out of Calais Campbell was more of a playmaker, more of a game wrecker, especially on the run defensive side. They have not seen that yet. And I think they're hoping once he gets past his calf injury, maybe that can come back. He took today off as his usual day off. Mm-hmm. But the only way the Ravens can stop Derrick Henry, and maybe slow down, contain Derrick Henry, is if Brandon Williams and Calais Campbell and Derek Wolfe, who they also added in the offseason, if those three guys, they have to play at their best. If they're not at their full best, they're going to be giving up a lot of yards to Derrick Henry.
Excellent point mentioning Derek Wolfe and that Week 11 game. He was outstanding for the first three and a half quarters or so, but then it got to the fourth quarter and it wore down because he was up there doing it by himself, you know. So I think getting Williams and Campbell back will help in that perspective too. I love the Ravens secondary. Jimmy Smith has been one of my favorite corners for quite some time, but Marcus Peters is a guy that I really like, and Marlon Humphrey is outstanding too, and they're solid with the safety position also. How are they looking at this, you know, coming up and having to, you know, be a force as well against the rushing attack with Derrick Henry? I know, you know, Humphrey likes to punch that ball out. Peters has a nose for the ball as well. So what's kind of been their approach this week?
Yeah, I think it's kind of twofold. One, when you look at those three corners, you have Jimmy Smith, who's more of the physical corner. You have Marcus Peters, who's more of that pure cover corner. And you have Marlon Humphrey, who's kind of in the mix. He's in the middle. And Marlon Humphrey is by far their best defensive player that they have. They understand when you go against the Tennessee Titans, you're going to have to be physical. You're going to have to respect the run first. And I wouldn't be surprised if the Titans try to attack whatever side Marcus Peters is on, because if they can get on the outside and it's Marcus Peters, let's just say Marcus Peters isn't the most enthusiastic tackler for the Ravens.
Yeah.
There are times when he'll maybe just a little sidestep. You know, they try to put his helmet in a little bit, but not the full shoulder into it. But the Ravens also know that you just can't totally sell out on the run. You can't get caught peeking in the backfield, because they respect the downfield passing by the Tennessee Titans. And so they understand they're going to have to help out as far as Derrick Henry. It takes more than just one player to bring him down. But they also know if they take one or two false steps forward, they better make sure they have to, if they're going to go over the top, they have to have that speed and that recovery speed, because it's one thing to allow a 12, 13, 14-yard run to Derrick Henry. There's another thing is you allow a 50, 60, 70-yard touchdown pass to the Titans as well. So they understand they have to be physical when it's the run, but they also have to know that there's a lot of play action with the Titans, and they have to make sure that they don't get beat deep.
J- Jameson, I agree 100%. And we're talking to Jameson Hemsley from ESPN NFL Nation covering the Baltimore Ravens. Before we get you out of here, I want to kind of spin it forward to the offseason, right? And obviously Ngakoue is a guy that is going to be up. Matt Judon, Tyus Bowser. Is there a way where they could bring all three of those guys back? And if not, who you think would be one that they would veer away from?
Yeah, they just don't have enough. But they would love, I mean, if it was no salary cap, they would love to bring all three back. But that's just not reality. And honestly, if you would even have said you would be putting Tyus Bowser in the same breath as Matthew Judon and Ngakoue, I would have been, you know, before the season, I would have been like, no. But he has been really good this year. He is. It's when you talk about most improved Baltimore Ravens, Tyus Bowser is definitely in that conversation. It'll be interesting because I think he'll want to see what his market value is. I think the Ravens, they have invested a lot of time and in development in him. I think they would like to try to bring him back, but there's obviously a limit of what they will be able to get. The interesting part is they have to bring back at least either Matthew Judon or Ngakoue. And with Judon, they've tried over the past, you know, year plus, almost 2 years, trying to get him. From what I've been told, he doesn't want anything less than $20 million a year. Mm. And they have not – they didn't give Ronnie Stanley, an all-pro left tackle, $20 million a year. It was a little bit like around 19.7. They didn't give Marlon Humphrey, who's one of their best players, $20 million a year. They got him to an extension, which is, again, around 19.7, 19.8 per year. They're not going to give that with Matthew Judon. So if that is his hard line, I don't see them bringing him back. And I think then it makes the decision a little bit easier with Ngakoue. They can still use the franchise tag. And because, and this is almost kind of for Ngakoue, where he wanted out of Jacksonville so badly, he took a pay cut to go to the Vikings. If they put the franchise tag on him because of that pay cut, they won't have to pay as much franchising him for a second straight year. So I think as far as bargain, I think that's kind of the route they will go, that they understand that Matthew Judon is probably going to get more elsewhere, like so many other Ravens pass rushers have. And I think they will put the franchise tag on Ngakoue and maybe try to get an extension done with him by July. But we'll see. But I think that's kind of how I see the landscape going as far as the Ravens and their pass rushers.
Awesome stuff. Jameson, I appreciate you. Ladies and gentlemen, make sure that you're going to ESPN.com, the Titans page for sure, but also the Ravens page. This is an outstanding game. It's going to be on ESPN, so make sure you watch that. But we both will have outstanding content for you. Jameson, we will talk. Actually, we'll probably be slacking. and I'm not saying slacking like taking off. I'm saying slacking like communicating. So we'll talk through there. But, yeah, man, I appreciate you as always. It's great to be able to double dip with you this year.
That's right. Yeah, it was always fun talking football with you. You have a great rest of your show.
Thank you, man. Take care.
This is Derrick Henry. You're now talking with TD.
Yeah. Run TMC. It's only right to do it this season, this week.
Yes, sir.
After the season that Derrick Henry put together. Man. Regular season is over. But I know you got something to pitch to me, so you know. Oh, well, let's let them know if for some reason they don't know who this is. This is Chris Sanders, former Titans receiver. And he wants to do his Satchel Paige impression. So, come on. Throw your pitch at me, man.
You know, the reason how we started the show, because you said you're a Run DMC fan. So, you're 0-3 right now. So, listen, you can start off on a good note. On the year just started, 2021, let's start a good note. Okay, I'm going to read a couple of quotes and you finish the song. Today you won tickets to see Dr. J, front row seat, no pay.
He said, round the back to the hoop and you scream, touchdown, you be illing.
Yeah, my man.
Hey, you missed it last week. I had, when I did blow the whistle,
yeah,
I called out the Packers refs, and I said, You're blind. Homeboy, you can't see. You need to wear sunglasses like DMC.
That's awesome, man. You one for four. Good job.
Two for five.
Two for five. Yeah, you get a 2 for 5. Sound like you want a Wendy's. Get a bag. Go ahead. 2 for 5.
Never frozen.
How you doing, man? Man, them Titans balling, ain't they, man?
Yeah, no doubt. Ooh. They are definitely balling. And I tell you, the balance that they found on offense is tremendous. Tremendous. Yeah. Corey Davis, though. Daggone, Corey.
Yeah, you know, I could have got that. Man, you know what? I think he had a lot on his heart, man.
Newborn father, you know what I mean? New father. I mean, there was a lot on his heart, you know, a new year.
Yeah.
And he's been through so much. And that's the thing why it just kind of like my heart ached for him, because I know in talking to him how much that 1,000-yard season, how important that was for him. But he fell short. Can roll it over into the playoffs, so we don't have to spend too much time on that. I think he still is worthy of getting a solid deal, and I think he'll be back. I think he should be a priority, you know.
And that's a good job. I'm glad you said that, because everybody's like, well, go get rid of him and get somebody else. Mm. They got the chemistry. Why don't you keep them together and then use all your draft picks on defense?
They clearly got the chemistry, clearly, and use all of your. And there's a good number of edge guys that you could get. And I think you know how the game goes. You could tweak some things to find money that you technically shouldn't have. They can make some things work. But one of the things that they had to work out last year was bringing back Derrick Henry. Yeah. Obviously, Tannehill as well. But Derrick Henry, I mean, good, great. The accolades, we could go on and on and on. But let's just, I mean, going into this game, he needed 223 yards. He had a buck 13 in the first half. I mean, what can you make of what Derrick Henry did last week?
You know, first of all, I want to apologize, because I got asked this question, not your question, but I got asked a question about 2 months ago. They said, with you playing with Eddie George and you send Derrick Henry, who's the best back that you've seen? And I said Eddie George. And Eddie George is probably one of the hardest working backs that I've ever played with and one of the toughest. But what we're seeing with Derrick Henry, I've never seen this in my life. Mm-hmm. I mean, you going in the game and, you know, you need 200 and some yards, and you get 250, like it's just like riding a bike.
Yep.
And then I know, you know, and you know what I'm kind of disappointed is nobody's really talking about it. You know? I mean, nationally, this dude got 2,000 yards, and is on the list with Eric Dickerson, Adrian Peterson, Jamal Lewis, Barry Sanders, Chris Johnson, O.J. Simpson. You're on the list of that. And we're barely talking about it? Barely. Only time I heard it was on the day of and the next day. Nobody's making a big deal. This dude got 2,000 yards, and nobody's talking about it. I just don't understand.
And you're 100% right. I don't get it. I'm one that's always going to give Derrick Henry his flowers. And he's one of the three players on this team that, you know, I have to be cautious with, because, you know, I want to always be objective and I don't want to, you know, be a fan of a player, but, you know, I'm as close as you could get with Derrick Henry.
Right.
With A.J. Brown and Kevin Byard. But I just think it's really remarkable. And it's just every week. And I said this in the opening segment. Every week there's a table that gets pounded, right, in the defensive meeting. And that coach says 22 is not going to beat us. He's not going to have his way with us. But guess what happens each and every week?
Every week. Not every week. Each and every week. You know what I'm saying? But here's what I want to do, man. I know, you know, Henry's getting a lot of, you know, a lot of love by us. But let me give some love where it's due. Let me give a love to the offensive line coach, Keith Carter. That's number one. Look at what he's done. Look at what the offensive line has done. You had three starting left tackles. Luan got hurt. And then you have a right tackle, Wilson, who doesn't play, and you still get 2,000 yards? Come on, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's amazing, because sometimes it doesn't even have to do with just being the most athletic guy or the best left tackle or the best right tackle or the best, you know, center. It's about six or seven guys. Well, let me rewind it. It takes 11 guys that's on the same page. 11 guys said, you know what, I'm going to block as a receiver. If I'm an offensive tackle, I'm an offensive guard, if I'm a center, I'm going to do my job. If we went to a different state and we said, man, hey, do you know Kelly? Do you know Isaiah Wilson? Do you know LaJuan? Do you know Quisenberry? They look at you like, who? I don't get it. It's unbelievable.
It really is. And we got to shout out the receivers, too, on what they've been able to do. I think that's outstanding, blocking down the field. Just a total effort. So let's spin it forward to Sunday.
Mm-hmm. Woo!
Derrick Henry going against this defense. Or you know what? Let's say the rushing attack, because I don't like to just say Derrick Henry because it does take all 11, and all 11 contribute to that. So the rushing game going against the Ravens defense that will be bolstered this go-round by – the addition of Calais Campbell and Brandon Williams in the middle there. What do you make of that?
We're going to have to stay patient, because it might be tough from the first quarter, second quarter, even to the third quarter. And Derrick Henry needs to have that same attitude. Not just Derrick Henry, I'm sorry for saying that. Derrick Henry, the offensive line, the receivers need to have that same mentality and that same attitude that they had in overtime. Is when you look at the end of the game, those Baltimore Ravens were laying on the ground and they were exhausted because you took their will. That's what it's going to take this game. It's going to be a physical game. They're mad. The Baltimore Ravens are mad at the Tennessee Titans, and they're going to come in here and give 1,000%. So they're going to have to stay patient in the run. You know, even if it's starts off slow. Even if it's into the second quarter to where he only has like 30 yards. Keep pounding them. Keep running the ball and take their will like they did on that last drive to win it the last time.
Right, and on that last drive, coincidentally, Quisenberry,
yeah,
Aaron Brewer, Khalif Raymond all had key blocks.
That's what I'm saying.
Before that jump cut and acceleration. And I keep saying that over and over again because, you know, to be honest with you, of all the things, I love the stiff arms. You know, it's been fun watching that. Mm-hmm. It's pretty cool seeing him, you know, get into that alley. But of all the things I've seen Derrick Henry do, that jump cut and acceleration off of it was probably the one thing that made me like, you know, this guy truly is different.
He is. But his vision, and here's the funny thing about it is when he got into the league, everybody talked about how bad his footwork is. They were having videos of how he was trying to go over the bags and he looked terrible. But it's a token to, if you just work hard and be coachable, you can do some great things, because his feet work were terrible. But look at his feet work now.
Yep.
Listen to his running back coach, Dudes. Dudes is like, okay, trust me in this area. Be coachable. Let me teach you some things that you probably didn't learn in college, and let me take you to the next level. So you got to take your hat off to Henry, saying, you know what? Yeah, I won the Heisman. Yeah, I'm a great back. But there's always room for improvement, and you just see the fruit of his reward by him just doing the little things, not just the big things.
You see them in practice, you know, watching them in individual period, and the stuff that they do with trash cans, like they'll take the trash can and turn it to the left and you gotta cut to the right off of it, you know, and it's just the different things like that is definitely fulfilling. And that's as a staff overall, they do an excellent job of developing drills that transfer to games. One of the other things, just to kind of focus on the footwork, Adrian Peterson, he compared, and I thought it was really interesting, because he was asked, you know, who Derrick Henry reminded him of. And it's just crazy you mentioned the footwork, because he said Derrick Henry to him is a blend of Eddie George and Terrell Davis. And it was the size with Eddie George, but he pointed to the footwork that Terrell Davis had and said that that's how Derrick Henry's footwork is. I thought that was really cool, especially with you mentioning the footwork and focusing on it here.
You know, I played against Terrell Davis my rookie season because he was in my draft class.
Mm.
And when I saw him, when he played with the Denver Broncos and I was with the Houston Oilers /Titans, you know, when I saw him, I mean, he wasn't fast, he wasn't flashy, but, man, he just made one cut, jump, and let's go.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just his footwork. And everybody wants to glorify the guy who runs a 4.3, 4.4. That's great. That's outstanding. But do you have the same vision as a guy that runs 4.6 and jump cut and accelerates through the hole? So, man, I just take my hat off to Henry, is because number one, he's coachable. Number two, he's willing to do the little things. And number three is he runs hard every single time. Every single time.
Every time, every time. And just to kind of do a little bit of plugging, I have a post coming out, ESPN.com. I actually got my guy Elijah over there reading the final version before it comes out. But, you know, we had Jamal Lewis on the Darren Donick and Chase show. He spoke about Derrick Henry, so I got some quotes there. But I reached out to Sean Alexander, obviously Eddie George, and Adrian Peterson. And the post is coming out. It's all of those guys giving their perspective on you know, how what advice they would give to Derrick Henry, and then also why these high volume of carries won't affect him. So make sure you take a look out for that, folks. And, yeah, definitely you too. Before we get out of here, we got to flip it because there is more than just one team on this field on Sunday that runs the ball really well.
I know.
Those Ravens. And anytime you have a QB like Lamar Jackson where – you really have to, as a defensive end, you know, you have to account for that. It always makes it harder to defend the run. But, you know, when you mix in J.K. Dobbins, the rough and rugged, Gus Edwards.
Where is he from, though?
Oh, yeah, I know. Where is
I don't know. Where
are
you from?
The Ohio State?
It is.
Okay, I'll give you that. But when you mix that in with Gus Edwards and then Mark Ingram, you know, what do you make of this rushing attack, this four-prong, not three, four-prong rushing attack? With a patchwork offensive line.
I know. You know, I look at them is, I think the key is to stop this running game is the linebackers can't get their eyes caught up in the backfield. It's so many things going on. You got misdirections. You got receivers coming, doing speed sweeps. And then you got to look at that. You got to look at, you know, backs going a different way. So they just got to make sure they read their keys. That I know that sounds football talking. I know it sounds cliche-ish. But if you don't watch where the ball is, you're going to look up and tackle the wrong guy, and you got Jackson running for a touchdown. Mm-hmm. So the key is understanding. Let me read my keys. Okay, if the back is set to the right or set to the left, if he's a little deeper, what is he going to run? So they're going to have to really pay attention to with film work to understand, okay, if he's lined up here, they're doing this. If he's lined up there, he's doing that. Because if you misread your keys, the linebackers misread their keys, the secondary misreads their keys and try to come up and try to tackle, uh-oh. There's Jackson gone for a 60-yard run. So we got to be careful, read their keys, and understand where the ball's at.
No doubt about it. And it's funny because there is so much misdirection and everything, and it could definitely, you know, mess things up. I think this is a week where in every defensive meeting, they need to have this song playing in the background. Remember Tina Turner? We don't need another hero. This is not the week for hero ball, man. You got to do your job and maintain your assignment. Otherwise, it's going to be bad, man. It's going to be bad. And I can't help it. You know what I mean? All my life, I grew up around music. My parents listened to music all of the time. Man. So
Let's see if you remember this song. A group called A Flock of Seagulls.
A Flock of Seagulls.
Yeah, and I run so. Come on, man. You don't know music, man.
I don't know that one.
You don't know music.
A man. Flock of Seagulls.
Come on, man.
I don't know that one.
Oh, man.
That must be an Ohio thing, man. A Denver thing. Out there singing John Denver. Rocky Mountain High. You got to have fun with this, folks. You have to. That's what we do, and that's why it is never a problem,
man, no
doing
doubt.
This segment, man. I appreciate you, Chris.
Appreciate you, dog.
Man. Yes,
like
sir.
You, man. Appreciate you.
All right, man.
All right, man.
We'll holler.
All right.
Hey, man, this is Kevin Byard, and I'm talking with TD.
Best protect your neck. All right, back from the break. Hey, that's exactly what the Titans defense has to do out there, protect their neck, because the Ravens with Lamar Jackson and all of that speed from him, with Devin Duvernay, with Marquise Hollywood Brown, J.K. Dobbins, there's so much speed on the field, so they do have to protect your neck. We're going to bring Mike Herndon back in from Broadway Sports Media Group. Mike, let's get into this Titans defense. And there's some historically bad things as far as playoff teams. I mean, we could get into that a little bit. You look at the playoff teams. 1979 Broncos were the last team to have 19 sacks and make the playoffs. Worse than that, you have the Falcons. And I want to say it's the 1982 Falcons and the 1970 Dolphins, I believe it was. that were worse. And I have to go in and check, but still, it's bad. And then you look at the third down opponent conversion rate is stupid. It's bad. You know, 51%. You look at the amount of passing touchdowns, 36 passing touchdowns they've allowed this season. That's the worst since the 2008 Cardinals. But the Cardinals did go to the Super Bowl that year. I mean, yeah, so it's there's a chance, you know. But when you look at this defense, what has been the problem that has made them historically bad in certain categories?
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's pretty glaring. I think the pass rush obviously jumps out first to me because, you know, you look at the sack numbers. And then more than that, you just watch the game and you see how many times and you just – and I can hear the play-by-play announcer in my head every time a quarterback drops a pass. Is you know, Watson drops back, has time, lots of time, still looking, and pass is complete, you know, for a first down. It seems like that little refrain is spewed out about 30 times a game against the Titans because guys just have time to – camp out in the backfield, and you're asking a ton, especially, you know, from a defense that runs a lot of man coverage. Right. You're asking a ton from your secondary when you've got no pressure at all for long periods of time. They uncharacteristically got three sacks against the Texans, but even in that game, I felt like, you know, those three sacks were great, but, you know, the balance of the snaps, I just felt like there's nobody home half the time. And you know, anytime you put, you know, a quarterback and especially a good one like Watson in the pocket for that long, they're going to hurt you. So I think that stands out. And I also think linebacker has been, especially since Jayon Brown went out, has been a tough, tough position for the Titans. I think David Long's playing pretty well, all things considering. I love his instincts and love the way he works through traffic and is able to get in there and mix things up in the run game. But I think his eyes are still a little all over the place, which, you know, not unexpected for a second-year guy that hasn't played a ton of football yet at the NFL level. But, you know, he's susceptible to play-action fakes. Rashawn Evans has always been susceptible to play-action. Both those guys love to come downhill, and they kind of get up on their toes a little too much, and sometimes that leaves the middle of the field wide open. So even if your corners are playing pretty good football, there's still holes to be found in that secondary. So I think it's a combination kind of no pass rush and then linebackers that really aren't helping you from a coverage standpoint.
That's an excellent point about the linebackers, and it's something that's not talked about enough, and you're 100% right as far as the play action. You know, the other thing that puzzles me about these linebackers is, you know, when they have those drop zones, it just seems like tight ends and receivers are able to find the middle of the field so easily and just find that window on third and 11, right? And it's just like, it's mind-boggling, you know, and I don't have a horse in the race, but I still want to bang the table when I see that because it's just frustrating to see it. And that's a great point that you bring up there. Real quick, the stat that I was looking for, it is the 1982 Falcons in 9 games, 18 sacks. The 1970 Dolphins in 1970, they had 18 sacks. So you're right. It's historically bad, so they have to get that together. As far as what you're seeing with this team going against the Ravens, you know, I asked Mike Vrabel, I probably phrased it wrong. I said matching Lamar Jackson's speed, and he appropriately said he's not sure if they have anybody that can match his speed, and if they do, to let him know. But more importantly, I think having more players that are faster, right, and going with players that could play in space, a.k.a. dime packages, and still being able to defend the run. I think that's something that is really good for this Titans team going against the Ravens because they run things like fast break offense. You know, before Elijah's time and before your time, you had that Showtime Lakers. I'm talking about in the 1980s. Man, Magic Johnson would run that break, and it was all about spacing, all about getting that space. And I think that's what you're starting to see Greg Roman finally do? And I wrote about this on ESPN.com, so you could check that out. You're finally seeing them get out of the multiple tight end sets, because it's actually by force, because they don't have tight ends available to them that they fully trust. Now Lamar Jackson is really coming into his own again. So that being said, what are your thoughts on the spacing and on the dime package still being able to defend run? Do you think that that gives the Titans an advantage against the Ravens?
Yeah, you know, it's the Ravens were kind of an interesting team for the Titans to play, because, you know, on one hand, they are red hot. They've won five in a row. The offense is clicking. I mean, they just ran for 404 yards last week against the Bengals, which is nuts. But, you know, from a Titans standpoint, obviously the Titans' big Achilles heel, and everybody pretty much knows, is, you know, the pass defense.
Yeah.
The run defense isn't great, but it's been passable, and it's been better over the back half of the season than it was early on. So the Ravens have run for more yards than they've passed in five of the last six games, which is really rare in the NFL these days. So I think it's a matchup where, you know, maybe the Titans' biggest weakness isn't quite as, you know, it's not really in the Ravens' wheelhouse to attack it. But I think Lamar presents his own challenges. They've settled on Dobbins now, really, is kind of the go-to back, and Ingram's kind of out of the picture, which I think it really makes them more dangerous. Dobbins has been the better back all season, in my opinion. But, you know, they've got all that speed. They've got Mark Andrews, who's kind of his third down safety blanket that they'll have to always know where he is. But it's definitely one of those situations where, can you defend the run with the lighter packages, like you said, the dime packages? You know, get the three safeties, you know, three or even, you know, throw three or four corners on the field. I mean, maybe play some Christian Fulton and let Desmond King play a little bit of like dime linebacker.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I like the idea of that. It's just whether or not you can hold up, you know, with that front, and those guys can play big enough when they try to come downhill at you, because they will. They'll come downhill enough to keep you honest with, you know, before they can get back to their kind of spread and run sideline to sideline kind of stuff. It's going to be an interesting tactical matchup on that side too. And I feel like the Titans have had kind of their number from a defensive standpoint. You know, obviously they held them 12 in the playoffs last year. They held them to, was it 24, I think, earlier this year. So it's, you know, which 24 sounds like not exactly a stellar defensive effort, but for the Titans, that's pretty good this year. So if you could hold them to 24 again, you'd certainly take it in this matchup, I think. But we'll see what happens. I think you've got to get speed. You've got to be able to match what they want to do from a speed standpoint. And then you've got to, you know, you're going to have some little guys, you know, like a Vaccaro, I feel like is a critical
Bingo.
Piece in this game, because he can play that physical game inside the middle of the defense, but he can still run and chase and provide some speed too. So those kind of guys like King and Vaccaro and even David Long, I think, are going to be absolutely crucial to their success in this game.
So glad you mentioned Vaccaro, because he's actually the guy that I'm thinking of when I say being able to defend the run out of those sub packages. You look at what he does, it doesn't get noticed. And it's almost once a game I want to tweet it, you know, but I try not to come across as like a fan of any particular guy, you know. It's tough, especially with A.J. Brown and Derrick Henry, because I really – and Kevin Byard, because I really like those guys. But, you know, you watch him, sometimes you'll see him come down and just absolutely blow up in the offensive lineman. You know, and someone else will go in and make the tackle, and you're just like, good Lord. I wish they had a stat for that, you know. And I'm just so glad you mentioned him, because it is 100% right. His ability to play down there in that box and just get involved where it gets so rugged, it is huge for them this week. I think another thing, and this was something that I kind of went over last year before that Ravens game in the playoffs, I think it's going to be really important to get effective blitzes from the nickel spot. And using Desmond King in a similar way to how they used Logan Ryan last year. And obviously, you know, two different players for sure. But it's going to be really important to send King off of that edge and flush Lamar Jackson to one side of the field. And when you're doing that, you're giving yourself another defender in the sideline. So now it is it's automatically 11 on 11, as Rabel said on Monday, because of Lamar. But now you're going 12 versus 11 because you have the sideline as an extra defender. I think that's really important as well.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. Because it gives your entire defense, you know, your safety can start kind of peeling over towards the sideline. You're really compressing the space. You know, this offense thrives in space. They want to get as much of the field open and available to them as possible. And anytime you start to compress or push them in one into a box, you're getting an advantage. So, yeah, I think that's a great point about kind of bringing those nickel blitzes and keeping them. And frankly, the nickel blitz is great too, because that may be the only player on the field that has a hope of catching Lamar when he starts to take off. So,
true that.
I think that's a great point.
And then we'll layer that. And this is something that I've been thinking about for Whiteboard Wednesday. I'm trying to, you know, I'm bouncing it back and forth. Do I want to go with the look from a zone perspective or go with the look from a man? I'm probably going to go man because I can see them doing more man. But you don't want your backs to the quarterback like Lamar. But I can see them doing more man in this game. That being said, you want to make sure that you have something dropping, whether it be a safety dropping down or a guy like Harold Landry dropping back, someone getting in that passing lane, because you know they're going to read hot, and he's going to put the ball there, and that could be an opportunity for a quick turnover, which takes us to another thing that I think is imperative. You have to get turnovers in this game. You cannot allow them to, play your style of football, right? That taking care of the football, the ball control, that complimentary football, to use that phrase, you can't allow them to do that. And turnovers could also come on fourth downs. You could have a turnover on downs, which was a key to the game last year in the divisional playoffs.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and the Titans defense, for all their struggles, that's one thing that they've actually done fairly well this year, is managed to be disruptive and turn the ball over at times. They've been opportunistic in the secondary. When the ball does get in the air, they do a good job of going and getting it. I think Lamar, he hasn't turned the ball over a ton, really, over the last few years, but he does put the ball in danger at times. And I think he's also kind of got that – he's got that little three-quarters arm slot that the ball comes out a little bit lower – from him than it does for most quarterbacks that stand in the pocket. So I think when the ball comes out, if you can get Jeffrey Simmons, Daquan Jones, Tyre Tart, those big guys in the middle getting their hands up, when those passes come out hot over the middle and get some of those deflections and tips that can turn into big plays, that's going to be key too.
Match hands. I guarantee you Terrell Williams. Matter of fact, I'm going to run over to the defensive lineman and watch. I guarantee you the kickball is coming out. And they're going to go through that matching hands drill that they do. So that's another excellent point there. I could keep doing this till tomorrow, but unfortunately we only have so much recording time. This is going to happen again for sure. And this offseason, Mike, we're going to get together and we're going to do some things. I'm not asking you, I'm telling you right now. We're going to do some things because I really enjoyed this. But before we get out of here, We have a segment that we do on here in the rap, and let me just get the music so Mike can see.
Blow the whistle.
Yeah, blow the whistle. So what we do, Mike, each week we play that music, and then I call out something football related that gets on my nerves, that bothers me, and that I want to blow the whistle on. And I mean, there are a few things you could probably blow the whistle on the Titans for, but you know, I covered the Eagles a couple years ago, and Doug Peterson, just what the heck are you doing? I mean, daggone. You take Jalen Hurts out. I thought the key always for a team that's not in the playoffs, I thought the key was always finish on a high note. You put in Nate Frippin Sudfeld. Nate Sudfeld, with all due respect to Buck Rising, you know, who's a fellow Indiana guy, Nate Frippin Sudfeld. I'm blowing the whistle on the Philadelphia Eagles and Doug Peterson. That's mine. If you have one, Mike, you could chime in. If not, hey, man, I get it.
You know, I'll blow one on I agree with you. Pulling him and I mean, Hurts is the guy that they wanted to get a look at, right? And this is free run to get a look at Hurts and decide whether you think you can build around him or not. It's ridiculous what they did. But I'm going to blow the whistle on the other side, too, with Joe Judge whining about it. Go get a better record than 6-10 if you're going to whine about not making the playoffs. If you finish 6-10, you don't deserve to be in the playoffs, regardless of who sits who in what game. You know, save the theatrics, Joe. I thought he was a little over the top with that. Yeah. I agree with you. The Eagles shouldn't have done what they did. It was kind of silly to do it the way they did it anyways. But, you know, Judge kind of acting like, you know, oh, my gosh, we got robbed. You were 6-10. Come on.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, look, four games under 500. Like, you know, fall back a little bit there, Cowboy. You know what I mean? You needed to actually two games, excuse me. But, yeah, no, that's a good one. That's definitely a good one. And for the Eagles to do that after Jason Kelce just went on. Jason Kelce, by the way, you would love to be in a locker room with him because he will sit down. The talking with TD, the film breakdowns that I used to do, that started with Jason Kelce. Because one time I sat with him and he went over a play for me. I was like, oh, shoot, this is something we should do. You know, but he went on a rant about putting winning before everything. 3 weeks later, this is what they did. So that's just a look, man. God bless the people there at Lincoln Financial Field and at the complex. You know, you guys got to figure it out, man. So that's that, man. I appreciate you coming on, Mike. As I said, we'll continue this. We got to do this again, especially draft season. I know we have a common affinity for Patrick Jones II.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? So we'll get into that and a bunch of other stuff. Ladies and gentlemen, be sure to check Mike out at Mike Miracles and also check out the work that they're doing at Broadway Sports Media Group. In addition to that, shout out to Chris Sanders for coming on, Jameson Hensley, ESPN NFL Nation, Ravens reporter. You hear the music. We're out of here. Thanks for tuning in. And I have to put a shout-out to Elijah. My bad, Elijah. I almost forgot about you. So we'll go out on that note. Thanks for tuning in. God bless and good night.